Blog Talk Radio.
UR Tennis is an advocacy group for underrepresented tennis participants. These participants would include players, parents, coaches, and the learners of all racial minorities, all social class minorities, all sexual minorities, all age-related minorities, and anyone who seems to have been forgotten. Our mission is to act as the voice for tennis. We are striving to bring forth programs, contests, issues, news, education, and philanthropy that will benefit all in tennis. We are seeking active participation from populations that believe they have an interest in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We want to expand our outreach royally, regionally, nationally, and worldly. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to continuously be talked about, and we will pursue this idea relentlessly.
Started with hanging posters on my bedroom wall. The battle rapping for status up in the schoolhouse. Just call me Double Sushi, thought I was too raw. And hip hop was my home, I had my shoes off. 6'3 in high school, skip a hoop dream. If I don't blow up, then maybe I'll try the school thing. I went to college to do my family a favor, but I couldn't pick a major cause I wanted to be major. I tried selling rocks, but it didn't work. So I worked, chopping center cart, finna go berserk. Lunch break, see me writing 16s over Mickey D's. Skipping class, making beats over. And I love it even though I'm just chasing. Selfish ambition, couldn't tell your boy Nathan. Watch out all you rappers cause they finna let straight in. But I was sleeping on the sun like the day's been. And you can have the money, and you can have the fame. For me, I want the glory, I'm living for the name. See, life is just a picture, I see outside the frame. I'm living for a kingdom, and I ain't never seen. And I'ma take that, I'ma take that. Find a key to life, and let's believe that I'ma play that. Glory, I'ma take that, I'ma take that. Glory, I'ma take that, I'ma take that.
Quiet, please. Here comes the chair umpire.
And now, introducing the umpire of today's match. Hailing all the way from Burnett, Texas, and representing college coaches everywhere, the only one we could find to call the match, Jason Haynes! The show will be the best 2 out of 3 sets with tiebreakers, and is called Diversity in College Tennis. So turn on your phones and get ready to call in.
Good afternoon. We want to welcome everyone to today's show of Diversity in College Tennis. My name is Jason Haynes. I am the host of the program and look forward to giving you some good news today. We've got an exciting show today. On this program today, we have Mr. Ed Love, who's been a partner of the sponsor of the UR Tennis Network now for about 8 months, and we're looking forward to him coming on and talking about alternative lighting and power. And he has some guests that he's going to bring with him, Ms. Nicole Williams, to also talk about a sister company of alternative lighting and power, North American Power. And very excited to get a chance today to visit with both of them. And then after those two guests, we've got Mr. Simon Earnshaw. Simon is the coach out at Armstrong Atlantic University. He's one of the top Division II programs in the United States of America. And he's going to follow up Dash Connell from Tyler Junior College last week and tell us about the experiences out at the National Small College Championships that were held in Mobile, Alabama. So we do have an exciting show for you out there today. Those that are listening live and those that are podcasting, we're excited that you're here and can't wait to get this information out to you. For those of you that are new to the show, each week I start the show off with a big hello to my mom, Stella Haynes. Stella was the first listener besides the show's radio producer that listened to our program. She even called in that day, and I'll never forget that. We have grown exponentially since then. I would like to thank her for her ears because they have multiplied many, many thousands of times, and we're glad to have her listening in today. Those of you that do not know who I am, my name is Jason Haynes. I have been a college coach for 20 years. I spent most of my time at the community college level. I had stints at Tyler Junior College where, with the help of Coach John Peterson, we won 8 national championships. I then went to Southwest Texas State University under the tutelage of Neil Kinlan and helped the men there. I also spent 12 of my years at Lee College in Baytown, Texas, where we won the national championships in 2002, 2007, and 2009. I was named the ITA Wilson Coach College Coach of the Year in 2002 and 2010, and then elected to the NJCAA Hall of Fame in 2009. I also spent some summers out at Stanford University under the tutelage of Dick Gould and John Whitlinger, and had wonderful experiences out there. Today's show is jam-packed, so I think that we've got Mr. Love on the phone. Let me see here if I can bring him in. Mr. Ed Love, are you there? Oh, we've got a little bit of technical difficulty here. Hang on, Ed. It'll come up in just a second. Getting there. Ed Love, are you there? Coming. A little bit of technical difficulty here today. Hang on just a second, Ed. It'll pull up any moment. It's working. You know, these computers are funny things. As we go through this, we need all the help from the computer. Wiz is out there to get this thing going. Let me see, Ed Love, if you would. I think we're going to need you to call back. Hold on just a second, radio listeners. Yeah, that's the way it was. You know, with technology the way it is today, you just never know what you're going to get out here. We want to thank all the ITA Wilson regionals for getting their jobs done. I know the Division I's have been out there heavily promoting and getting things done. And we're glad that they've been putting on their tournaments. We've been following those. I know that a lot of the Central Regionals and Western Regionals were held this last weekend. Unfortunately, we won't get all the news in this week. Just hang on just a second. They'll call back in just a little bit. You know, it's a wonder with these technologies what goes on here. It's amazing. Amazing, amazing. You know, these computers will only do what you ask them to do and no more or less. Let's try this again. Mr. Love, are you there? Oh, Ed Love. That's the background noise there. I'll tell you what. It's something else. I've been doing this for a while. It always seems that whenever we get an important guest on the air, we have a little bit more technical difficulties than we normally do. And just ask our listeners to hang in there. He'll be back in just a little bit. We're going to get this guy on. Wonders of modern technology. Maybe he'll call in from a different phone. Let's see. Let's try it one more time. Here we go, Mr. Love. Hello, Ed Love. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Jason.
Yeah, finally, Ed. You know, it's funny how these computers work. They only do what we tell them to, and glad you're on the show.
Well, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, now, your company, Alternative Lighting and Power, has been a big help to the UR Tennis Network over the course of the last 8 months. Can you tell us a little bit about your company and what its plans are?
Yeah, we are a renewable energy company. We provide products and services and engineering for wind power and for solar power. So our goal is to increase our own homegrown energy production here in the United States on our own soil. So that's what we do in a nutshell, and we're glad to be able to work with colleges because we know that they are great users of power and they can use all the help they can get.
Well, Ed, I've been listening to the presidential debates, and I noticed most recently renewable energy is a hot topic. Can you kind of go into detail on these educational institutions, what you could help them do with renewable energy?
Yes. Let me say one thing right quick before I get into that. You know, as far as energy production, energy use, that's greatly based on our oil. And America happens to be the largest consumer of energy. As a matter of fact, we use 20% of the world's production of oil, and that's more than any other country here on this planet. And the problem that we have here in the United States is that on our own turf, we can only drill enough oil to produce 2% of what we need. So we've got to come up with another source of production for energy, and that's what we're doing here is helping individuals, companies, schools, churches, everyone to be able to take part in energy production through wind and through solar. Also, and when we speak specifically about college campuses, we're able to do a lot of things for the campus as far as it helped the reduction of carbon footprint by using solar or using wind products, and also by changing some of the devices that we use, like, for instance, the lights. And we have the outdoor lights, we have the indoor lights. We can change those lights to something, another light source that would be like an LED light source, and those consume only like a third of the energy that the conventional lights are using. So we can cut down on the use of energy and still have the same brightness that we need, and like I said, lessen our carbon footprint, and use solar or use wind to generate the power that we need.
Well, Ed, it's a wonderful idea. How did you get involved with AL&P?
Well, it goes back to my days in the military. The Air Force was the developer of solar power, and so we've been using solar power in the military for more than 50 years now. And just now that we see that it's a great source for everything, so now the general market is being able to have access to the same type of equipment. And that's how I got started with it. So my love of science while my time in the Air Force.
Outstanding. Now, I'm going to get a little greedy here. I am a tennis coach, and we talk tennis here on our show quite a bit. So let me ask you specifically, if I'm a college tennis coach, or if I'm just a regular tennis guy out there that has their own courts, specifically, what can your company come in and do for me in regards to this renewable energy that helps us function and, as you said, kind of disappear from the grid?
Well, the thing here, Jason, is to, as we work with college campuses across the United States, the goal here is to, like I said, to reduce the amount of energy that we consume. And then when we do that, then, of course, we're talking about economics, the economical value of the solar and wind power. So now that you can have the same amount of light that you need, as a matter of fact, you can probably have better lighting, and it's going to cost you less money. Now, working with tennis departments, we can help them become a generating money generating factor on the campus as opposed to being a department that's a consumer of goods. So now the just by putting different lighting sources, the outdoor lights for the courts, using solar power on the rooftops to generate power inside. Now the with the money saved, it's just like the same as saying the money earned. So turning the tennis department into a money generating department on campus.
Well, now if I get this straight, I mean, and I'm just a tennis guy, so forgive me in all this. I mean, we're often looked at as the stepchildren of the athletic departments. We're put out on courts that are far away from the campus, and our budgets aren't all that big. But what it sounds like here, what you're trying to do is alleviate some of these budget concerns that these schools have for their athletic programs. Is that correct?
That's exactly what we're doing. Is bringing on this new energy source that, like I said, costs less, and therefore now the tennis department can be looked at in a totally different manner than any other department on campus because it's now generating funds, not only generating funds this is going to use, but it probably will be in excess to its own needs and be able to help out other departments, other budgetary issues that the school may have. Because understand, this is a long-term commitment. Solar panels usually have a warranty life of 25 years. So you're looking at changing light sources and energy sources that will be protected by warranties for 10 to 25 years. I mean, that's a big thing. Say, for instance, you have inside your dormitories, inside your office, you have the fluorescent lights. For those things have like a 5-year lifespan. Well, the light sources that we were going to install in the college campus, those light sources are going to have a 20-year lifespan. So that means that not only are you going to have a reduction in cost of the power system that you're going to consume, but now you have a reduction in manpower in the cost to maintain that system. Because those things where now you have instead of having the 5-year rotation above across campus, now you have a 20-year rotation. So that saves money as well.
And it sounds like you're fundraising on a unique level. Is that the way you think about this?
As a matter of fact, yes. And you know, we go even further than that, Jason. We understand that there's a lot of concern for meeting budgets, and we understand that there is a great need for departments to raise money. So we've gone the extra mile, Jason. And we brought on a sister company called Alternative Power Group that actually works with nonprofits like schools, universities, to not just for AR&P to reduce energy consumption, but now to turn the department into a fundraising opportunity. And Alternative Power Group happens to be an independent representative of North American Power. And that company generates.
Now tell me about North American Power then. Tell me about North American Power then.
Well, it's a great thing, Jason. North American Power is a company that produces nothing but clean green energy. And so we provide retail electricity, natural gas, and renewable energy certificates across America. Now, currently, the company has an energy footprint in Ohio, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, and Illinois. And soon, it will have an energy footprint in Texas, Georgia, and Michigan. Now, when I say energy footprint, that just means that those are the states where the company is able to sell is energy at this point. But when we talk about renewable energy certificates, we can do that in all 50 states, and that becomes a great product that the schools can attach themselves to as a fundraising opportunity.
Now, so your idea, you kind of helped me understand how your idea works with this North American power idea here. I mean, what can schools and educational institutions, churches, what can they do to raise funds through this group?
But see, Jason, this partnership offers an opportunity for all nonprofit organizations, which you're talking about schools and churches, private foundations and civic organizations, colleges and universities, an opportunity to create a free perpetual fundraising network where the supporters of the school become customers of North American Power and engage in a customer referral program or can take advantage of the business opportunity as well.
Well, you say perpetual. I mean, how long is this fundraising idea going to work for these schools?
Well, perpetual, Jason, we talk about forever. As long as we have a plan here, they can be funded every month. The organization will be compensated through a long-term, never-ending residual income opportunity, and it also gives upfront bonuses as well.
It just sounds too good to be true, Ed. Come on. I mean, what's the catch here? What do people have to do?
Well, actually, a little bit of nothing. Let me give you an example. Say, for instance, we have a college tennis group that wanted to raise money. Well, we understand that the college, the population on college campuses can come from all over the country, and it can come from, and it comes in great numbers. So North America Power has put together this fundraising opportunity for schools or nonprofits that you can get paid upfront money for each person that signs up. Say for instance that these kids that are in the tennis program, they can reach out to their parents and have them supported by becoming a customer of North American Power, or they can buy renewable energy certificates for 1950. And it's a zero investment program. The school will also get a free website and back office support. The fundraising network team for North American Power is available Monday through Friday to give them help. And like I said, the compensation benefits are long term. Let me give you an example. If the school or the organization brought in 50 members, they get a check for $250. And when you bring in 100, you get another check for $750. They bring in another 250, or when you reach 250, you get another check for $2,500. When you reach 500, you get another check for $7,500. Jason, that is $11,000 in upfront bonuses that the organization will receive, and that's outside of what they receive perpetual, like I said, never ending. For as long as these people are customers of North American Power, they will receive a check every month. Now, that may seem too good to be true, but this is factual, and this is the way that the company has put together the program, because we understand that renewable energy is something that we need, it's here to stay, and we can put together a program where everybody wins. And also, on top of that, the company is going to, for every person that becomes a customer, it donates $1 every month to a charity that you choose. So if we got 5,000 customers, then it's going to give them $5,000 every month. If we got 100,000 customers, that's $100,000 a month. So our goal is to make sure that we are helping everybody. We're going to donate thousands of dollars every month to the charitable organization. And we're going to compensate the schools upfront and long term. So we will be forever a partner with the school to raise money. And this format for fundraising doesn't cost school or organization not one dime.
Go ahead, finish your statement.
I was going to say, like in most fundraising opportunities, you're going to have to put some money up to make some money. But this is the first time that I've ever seen a nonprofit or a fundraising opportunity for nonprofits that they have actually a zero investment.
Ed Love, I forgive me, and I'm a layman here. I mean, you can include the tennis people, the athletic department, the alumni, and they can all contribute to the school without the school having to ask for any money. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. As long as they can meet the criteria of the fundraising network, and the only criteria that there really is that you are actually a nonprofit, so you have your paperwork that shows you're a nonprofit. We just turn it in, fill out the application, which is a one-pager, and in a couple of days we have you set up, and you're able to go out there and make money.
Ed, long term here, ALNP, North American Power, what do you see them doing in the educational field?
I see us being a great partner with every school in this great nation. Because the fact is, we understand that budget issues are the driving force for everybody. You can't succeed without having the financial tools to make these things happen. We understand that the schools need different things. They need equipment. They need to be able to travel. They need to be able to offer scholarships. They need to be able to increase the life of the sports or the comfort of a child on the campus. And those things take money. Well, we have a vehicle that can get them there and get them there very easily. Because at the end of the day, you know, everyone has a light bill. So we're not asking anybody to do something beyond what they already are doing. You know, so now you have an opportunity to pay your light bill with a company that is going to put money in the program that supports your child and in the community as well.
Well, Ed, we're talking, renewable energy, solar, wind. I mean, in these debates, it sounds like that's the future of America here. With your educational stance here, this includes kindergarten, junior high school, college, university, all these things?
Yes, and it includes the whole gamut. Every educational system in this country can benefit from a program that we put together.
Well, Ed, you know, a big concern here when we talk about ALMP in regards to these financial institutions, I mean, have you got ways to help them finance their opportunities?
Well, that's one thing with ALMP. Yes, they it depends on where the school is and what it's trying to accomplish. We can help with a couple of different things. If there are, for instance, if a school wants to upgrade their tennis program or their lighting for the courts, we understand that these things are not cheap by no means. So, yes, we do have funding available. We have funding partners that can help a school get the money that they need to upgrade their facilities. So whether they want to build a new building or they're trying to bring a new set of lighting or some cameras or new scoreboards or anything that's going to enhance this campus or the campus, yes, we have financial vehicles that can be of assistance. So we can either help them put together RFPs that would help them find other partners, and we can help them with getting bond money out there from the community, or we can help them with our own private sources that helps with finance. So it depends on the situation. Depends on where the school is and their goals to say what financial vehicle would be proper for their need. We understand that everybody's needs are going to be different. Everybody's situation may be a little different, but we all have the same need, which is to finance those things that we're trying to accomplish. So with putting those two things together, we're using ALMP as a source to build, construct, and to engineer those changes, and also using North American Power as a financial vehicle. We see that there should not be any reason why a school can accomplish its goals and needs. And like I said, the greatest thing about North American Power is that this fundraising opportunity, it never ends. And we understand that in most fundraising programs, when you start something, there's the end point. Because you're trying to raise, you know, X amount of dollars, and you say, well, we're going to wash cars for this weekend, and we're going to wash cars for 3 weekends in a row so we can get X amount of dollars. Well, this is a never-ending opportunity. So as long as the institution is standing, and as long as our customers are there, then there won't be any issue about North American Power issuing payments to the school on a monthly basis. And see, the greatest thing about it is that with North American Power, when you become a customer of North American Power, there is still a contract, a long-term contract, so there are a lot of benefits on both sides. So, for instance, a customer signs up and says, well, yeah, I'm going to support this university, and they become a customer of North American Power. One thing happens, they get a comparable rate to everybody else's without a long-term contract. And just for trying out the services, you get a $50 check for gas, and you get a $50 check for electricity. So, you know, right from the beginning, they come, they're going to say, well, thank you for supporting the school, and thank you for supporting North American Power, and here's the bonus check for you. And if you so decided that you wanted to move to another company, there are no penalties. So because of the fact that the company is doing what it's supposed to be doing, which is providing energy at a great rate, we have no need to lock somebody into a contract. We have no need to hold you hostage. So, you know, we're living in the land of the free, and our program is there to be there, to give you the greatest product without holding you hostage, so you can express your freedom as a member of the United States.
Well, Ed, you mentioned about 11 states. Is there plans for North American Power to expand in the other 39?
Yes, we are just following the program that the president has put in place. And he says that by the year 2014. That every state will be deregulated, and so we're going to follow that band of that wave of states. Currently, there are only 17 states, I believe, that are deregulated. And, yes, we're only in the seven, and like I say, we'll be in the next 3 to 4 months, we'll be in the 11th state. So the United States as a whole has a lot to accomplish. And what deregulation is, if anybody doesn't really understand what it is, deregulation, it takes the power from the fat cat and makes and gives us more choices as a consumer, and it gives more opportunities to entrepreneurs to start new businesses. Just like when deregulation happens with telecom, you know, we used to only have Marbell. And now you have all these companies using dip phones over the phone, and all that was stemmed from deregulation. Just like when the airlines deregulated, in the beginning you only had one or two airlines. Now you have several choices. And because of deregulation, we now have opportunities on the business side, and we have choices as consumers. And
go ahead, finish your statement.
I was to say that we all know who Bill Gates and Warren Buffett are, and those two guys have shared that the deregulation of electricity and gas is the greatest transfer of wealth that this country has ever known or will ever know. So that is that we're part of a community, we're part of an industry that's there for the long haul and is there for the betterment of this country. And for the betterment of us as individuals.
Well, Ed, it sounds like you've gotten involved with two great companies here. We love playing your commercial during all of our broadcasts for ALNP, but if someone wants to get in touch with you about North American Power, how do they do that?
Well, they have a couple of ways. They can go to the Internet. They can look up www.alternative-powergroup.com. And they can call the phone number 832-549-4193, or they can dial 832-549-4193. 4258. And that'll get them into myself and Nicole Williams and for North American Power and for Alternative Lighting Power.
Well, outstanding, Ed. We thoroughly appreciate all the support that you and your company have given us here at the UR Tennis Network. We look forward to continuing on our partnership as we grow. We hope that your company grows and helps all these educational institutions, athletic institutions, these churches, and all other 501(c)(3)s. I want to thank you for coming on today. Is there anything else you need to let us know about before you go?
Well, just to say that we appreciate the opportunity. We're glad that we can bring a valued service to the community, and we look forward to serving all of those that are in need. And all the schools that have a desire to do a fundraiser, remember to reach out to us, and we'll be more than happy to support you in every way that we can. So, again, phone number 832-549-4193. It's the number one number to get in touch with us here at North American Power.
Well, thanks so much for coming on, Ed, and we're going to have to get you on again in the future and go a little more in-depth about your company and programs. We appreciate your time today, and have a great day.
Well, you too. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you, Jason.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Ed Love, an outstanding supporter of the UR Tennis Network, and we look forward to playing his commercial later in the show. I'm going to take another commercial break here and then bring in Simon Earnshaw. So just hang on just one second. All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We apologize for all the technical difficulties today. It is the wonder of technology. We're going to try to reconnect here with Simon Earnshaw and get him on board and see what we can do. Okay, there it goes. It says we're not connected to the Internet, but I assure you we are. There I am. Callers, if you're out there, 714-583-6853. Simon, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here now.
Outstanding. I don't know what's going on. We got ghosts in the machine today. So glad you
came
on the show today.
Yeah, hopefully on this phone I can stay on, no doubt.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So let's get into this. I need to hear about the Simon Earnshaw tennis story and help my listeners understand who you are and how you got to where you are.
Yeah, well, I guess if we can identify the school that I'm at, currently the men's and women's tennis coach at Armstrong Atlantic State University. That's a state school, public school in the university system of Georgia. We're located in Savannah, Georgia. It's a Division II, NCAA II athletic program. University's got about 7,500 students. Probably of that, probably 6 to 6.5 are undergrad. The rest graduate programs. We've got a reasonable selection of degree programs. Kind of the demographic of our school is a little bit more tilted towards females. I want to say we're a good 65 to 70% female, so we've got a lot of programs in education, nursing, and those type of areas. As far as how we've done with the programs, I've been the coach here for 14 years now. I kind of was very fortunate to inherit a head coaching position at a very young age. I was the assistant coach here for around 9 months, and just kind of fell into the head coaching position. The women's program here had been very successful in the past. We'd won national title in Division II in 95 and 96. The men's program, we were around the top 20. We'd reached the semifinals back in 1990 and did so again, actually, when I was the assistant coach here in that 1 year in 1998. Since then, we've seen quite a lot of changes in Division II. Division II quite often used to be older student athletes. You could use the word failed pros. I think that, you know, maybe that's a dirty word or something that really didn't give a good image of what was going on potentially in Division II at the time. But the rules changed, so we got a much younger student athlete now, a lot more similar to what you see in Division I. When I came in and got the job in 98 and 99, I was kind of charged to have a lot more continuity with our student athletes, bring our athlete's age down, more of that of a traditional college student, which is what the university was trying to do at the time. And so in a way, I was a little bit ahead of the ball game in that regard. It did mean that the success came a little more slowly at the beginning, but by 2002, we were back in the championship game on the women's side. We won our first title in 2005. We beat BYU Hawaii in the final. We stopped their run of 137 consecutive wins in that match. And we also, at that point, had gotten our men's program to the point where we were competitive nationally. And we reached the semifinals that year, losing to West Florida. Since then, we've pretty much been there or thereabouts. And starting in 2008, we won both the men's and women's national championship in the same year. Did so again in 2009, won the women's for a third straight year in 2010, and then this past year we won both in Louisville at the Spring Sports Festival. Had a lot of very good student athletes here, obviously the majority of them being international. We've pretty much graduated a lot of them. We've had almost all of them here as four-year student athletes, or at least, you know, we might have had a couple of three-year ones that came in and they'd maybe had a couple of terms of attendance already. And, you know, I'm working with both programs. We're trying to get out there and provide an alternative, potentially, to going to a larger Division I school. We kind of run our program very much along the same lines. We're trying to get the best kids in here. We're trying to get people here that want to be here and want to invest in this university. As far as investment, I'm talking about time and effort. We're going to try and develop them as much as we can. We're going to give them the opportunity to play as much as they can. I really don't know how much you can develop without playing. We're able to move around quite a lot, play a lot of different events. We've become a lot more well-funded through the years. And so we can't necessarily provide all the things that come with that the BCS schools can do, but what we can do is provide a excellent level of progression for the players. We tend to be able to keep them healthy. I don't know whether that's just luck or whether it's circumstantial to what we're doing with our process. And ultimately, they appear to have an excellent experience here, and that's topped off with us being able to provide that championship experience, which is not easy to get. And I think whether you are Division 1, 2, 3, NAIA, junior college, there's only certainly a handful of schools for one reason or another that are able to provide that. And essentially, I guess that's the story of our program, not necessarily the story of me. I grew up in the north of England, came to the United States when I was 18, actually the first time I'd ever been on an airplane. I played my college tennis at Georgia College, and I guess the United States was always where I wanted to go from a young age, and essentially lived here longer than I lived in the United Kingdom at this point, and I think it was definitely a great choice for me, and I'm very happy in the south of the United States and still in the state of Georgia. I have my family here, and I'm very fortunate that I'm able to do what I can do, which is really do what I enjoy and make a living out of it. That's essentially my story.
I could tell with that accent that you weren't necessarily from Savannah, Georgia. Can you kind of tell us about Savannah a little bit? What kind of town or city is that place?
Well, you know, Savannah has essentially kind of turned itself into a tourist city. It's not necessarily a touristy destination that you would necessarily know. Certainly, it's not up there with a New York or an Orlando or a Las Vegas, but most of the revenue here is driven through tourism or by the port. We're located on the Savannah River, but we're actually very close to the Atlantic Ocean. With it being pretty flat here, you've got a bunch of islands before you get out into the ocean. Savannah is an old city in terms of the U.S. It was kind of spared being burnt down during the Civil War, and so the downtown area retains a lot of character. It's a good place to be. We've got quite a diverse population here. We have a College of Art and Design located in the downtown area, and that brings quite a bit of culture to the city. The university is located in the suburbs, which might actually be a positive. It keeps some of the distractions away, but they're right there if the student athletes want it. It's an interesting place. Obviously, the climate is conducive to outdoor activity, and that definitely helps us. It's fairly laid back. The city is probably 250,000 inhabitants, and even though we're on the coast, you're actually kind of close to a lot of different places. We thought we might be out in the sticks a little bit, but very quickly in Atlanta or down in Florida or even up into the northeast from here. So we're in quite a good location, but one that people don't necessarily think of or may just, in fact, either drive by while they're going up and down 95, or they may just come here for a long weekend. To see what there is downtown, to go to the beach or come to Hilton Head Island.
You know, now Armstrong Atlantic, if I'm kind of giving me a virtual tour here, when you bring a kid on campus, what do you have them see on the campus?
Well, we're kind of hemmed in a little bit between your kind of urban sprawl. For the internationals, it's actually pretty good because everything's real close. We've got a very tight campus. I think the major thing that we would be selling as far as the campus is concerned is that everything is very close together. So they literally can be at their housing. We have excellent housing. You know, originally Armstrong was a commuter school. It's been trying to make a bit more of a transition to becoming more residential. So the housing was all built within the last 10 years now and has been renovated during that time. And it's more of the apartment style accommodation, which is, you know, nice compared to, let's say, the traditional dorm room that I went to school in, where you're sharing a very tight space. So we have the housing literally located next to the center of campus, and then the tennis facility is probably within a minute's walk from that. So, and then everything kind of fans out from there. We've got a brand new student center, and it's definitely a massive upgrade compared to what we had before. You have obviously incredibly well kept as far as the environment and the ambiance on campus. And if we bring it on, could we essentially, you know, the main thing we're selling here, in addition to the academic programs, is the tennis program and what we can provide for the student athlete relative to the experience and also the accessibility of all of our facilities. Certainly not one of those schools where you've got to catch a bus to get from one end of campus to the other.
Sorry about that. Let's talk about your facilities. Can you kind of describe it for us? What have you got there?
Well, yeah, and that's obviously would be a little bit of a problem as far as our actual tennis facility when we're bringing a student athlete on campus. Our tennis facility kind of fallen into a state of disrepair. We have a new facility planned. Just seems to be taking a little longer than obviously would be hoped for us to construct that facility. So currently we're playing off campus, or at least we compete off campus. But right now we have the four courts located pretty much right next to the area where we have the weight room and the training room. And the actual location and the layout is excellent as far as how it was conceived. It's just kind of got beyond the point where we can really have a long-term future in that particular area, which is why they've not particularly renovated it or gonna, you know, try to engineer a solution to our drainage problem, which I'm guessing comes because we built a big basketball facility literally right on top of it. The place that we compete at is on the other hand, is actually for a public facility is absolutely excellent, and for a college match, strange enough, it works fantastically as well. It's just a pity that it's not on our campus. But then again, hopefully we're able to resolve that issue. And it's been a while now. We've kind of run into a few political roadblocks with constructing a new facility. We've got to add a light on the outside of campus and then close a road. And, you know, at a state university, these things can take time. So that's proving to be logistically somewhat of a problem. And, you know, obviously for the type of student athlete we may necessarily be competing for, that can be tough as well. But, you know, hopefully it's more about what's taking place on the tennis court rather than what it looks like. I know when I was working for Bolotaris when I was younger, I used to work for them in the summer. And you looked at the old photographs of the number of players that they were developing back in the early 80s, when you could literally, there was one particular photograph I remember where there must have been 50 people on there, and you could go down the line and name them all, and they were all potentially top 50 to 100 in the world on the men's and women's side. And then you went to the academy, and the academy certainly wasn't a country club, and it certainly wasn't what it is today after IMG has taken over. But it was more about what took place on the court rather than what the court looked like. And so ultimately it helps to have the best of everything, but you may have the best facility, but don't necessarily put it to the best use possible. So we're trying to sell more the people experience rather than the bells and whistles in that area.
Good. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, Armstrong Atlantic, can you kind of tell us a little bit about your fall schedule? What teams do you see in the fall?
Well, we've just kind of come off six straight weeks of competition. We started pretty early this fall. Normally, we wouldn't start until the middle of September, but the consecutive home games at the University of Georgia pushed the Southern Intercollegiates right to that finals weekend of the U.S. Open. So we played in Athens to kick off the fall with our men's program and looking at SEC, ACC schools in that event and other maybe smaller Division I programs from the Southern Conference, maybe Sun Belt or Big South or Atlantic Sun. So we started off there. The weekend after, our women competed at the College of Charleston to start their fall schedule off. We quickly, in small college, get into the ITA regionals. So we played in that the next weekend. It's kind of early, but just because you've got to qualify for the national event, and then the winner of the national event then goes to the intercollegiate indoors, you're kind of running out ahead of Division I in that regard. In some ways, that can be a bit of a hindrance with your scheduling in the fall. But anyway, so after the ITA regional event, our women's team played an event at Virginia Tech. So you're looking at more mid-Atlantic state, Division I schools. Obviously, Virginia Tech were there. William & Mary, and you have East Tennessee State, Liberty, these schools around that area. We went on from there. We actually went back to the University of Georgia for a hidden duel the weekend after that with the men, while we had some of the women's team playing at the Varner tournament at Rollins College. That's an event we actually usually try and play every year with some of both of our teams, but we was playing back in Athens that week with the men's team. We only had the women down there. And it was originally with ours, University of Georgia, Georgia Tech, and Furman. And then not this past weekend, but the weekend before that, we had members of both teams playing at Clemson. There's a lot of schools there on the women's side. There were 12 different draws, but the top schools essentially would be Clemson, obviously, Furman, Virginia Commonwealth, South Alabama were there, and I could probably keep going. And then we also had, we won the singles and doubles in both the men's and women's events in our ITA regional. And then they went on to compete in Mobile at the ITA Small College Nationals, which again was that same weekend. And we actually put all of our players through to the Super Bowl championship games and got close to winning all four, but couldn't quite pull off the men's singles. And we ran out winning the men's doubles and the women's singles and doubles. And that would qualify them then for the indoors in New York, which is the second weekend in November. So,
yeah, Simon, we had Dash Connell on the program last week from TJC. You know, you faced him in a couple of those finals. Can you kind of let people know what's the difference between a junior college, a top junior college player, and a top D2 player?
Well, obviously on the surface, there's really not that much difference. I mean, they beat us in the men's singles final, and we beat them in the women's doubles final. I think, we potentially have a little bit of an advantage in that we have four-year players. and the players that I had were upperclassmen, whereas at a junior college, they're just going to be freshmen or sophomore. And so in many ways, it's potentially more impressive, you know, maybe for the junior college, because they just don't have as much time to work with those kids and to bring them through to that point. So maybe it's a level of maturity, but that's only really if you're dealing with juniors or seniors at my level. You know, beyond that, I mean, we don't necessarily run across the junior college players too much, but you know, I think the rules have certainly limited somewhat what the junior colleges are able to do. Certainly compared to if you go back to the 1980s and potentially 90s. I think you would probably be aware of that yourself, right?
Oh, yeah. It's changed the way you recruit, definitely at the community college level. I mean, you've got to be sure that you're getting strong international players, which isn't any different than what you're trying to do there at Armstrong. You're just less likely to take a chance on an individual in that circumstance.
Yeah, no doubt. I use the word wrong that we potentially have an advantage. You know, there's pros and cons to everything, right?
Right.
But no, the difference is maybe when relatively on an individual level, I don't think there is that much in difference potentially, is there? But when you're talking about the totality of a team, because of those limitations you're presented with in junior college, then depth can become a lot more of an issue. And, you know, we're both looking for a certain segment or certain clientele with whom we're recruiting. So, you know, I don't think that changed. It's not necessarily the same type of student-athlete that we're both going for initially, although there may be quite a lot of similarities, and more so than I really know or understand in that regard. But, certainly on an individual basis, I mean, there's really no reason to be any difference. Obviously, the kid from Tyler, he should be looking good as long as he can complete his academics. And he should be in good shape moving forward, and I certainly don't think that that's any difference to Damien Hume a couple of years ago. And I think certainly there's a lot to be said for junior college as well as Division II as an alternative to the larger institutions that we see more often than not. Yeah.
You know, and then I'm going to ask, I mean, because since you do play so many Division I schools, I mean, how do your kids fare against these top-notch Division I schools?
Well, you know, you can't really quantify on a team level because we're competing individually, but I would like to think we more than hold our own. Once you get beyond the confusion as to exactly who we are, I'd definitely like to see us do better. I know we've lost some close ones here or there, but we've also had some notable wins through the years. We had a doubles team beat the number one doubles team on the women's side in Division I a couple of years ago. I mean, I could certainly probably list the ranked wins we've had, but I feel like we can definitely hold our own. I would hope we would be a tournament team in Division I, but it's so difficult to say. I mean, that would also depend on us being in the right conference and being able to play the right teams and then ultimately get the right results. And there would be slight changes relatively on maybe that may impact one player on each side, whether they would be at least initially eligible in Division I. But, we've done fine. I mean, we did great in the Hidden Jewel at University of Georgia. They were missing a couple of their top players at the All-American. But we were pretty much competitive all the way through our men's lineup. The women's side, we won the top three flights at the Virginia Tech tournament. up at Clemson. We won the third flight. We were, I think we were third maybe in the doubles in the top flight, although we weren't playing with our top players in that event. And so we're competitive all the way through. I would hope we'd be somewhere in the top 50. I may be underestimating that, but...
Well, Simon, let me ask you this. I a couple of weeks ago, you know, I had an idea here, and it goes along the small college idea. The ITA, do you think it would be possible that they could hold a national dual match championships? In other words, let's just say, hypothetically, that when the NCAA Division I team tournament starts, that basically they crown the other divisions, 2, 3, NAI, and JUCO. And let's just say, hypothetically here, we get those teams out to the NCAA Division I tournament, and they play just like they did a Super Bowl of dual matches, and they get an eventual team champion of small colleges. And then the day after the NCAA Division I's compete, they actually, the ITA promotes a true national champion in team tennis. Do you think that'll ever be possible, or are we way off base here?
Yeah, I don't think when it comes to the NCAA tournament that the ITA doesn't have that much sway on it, ultimately. I want to say that back, I mean, this is way before I was involved in college tennis, that potentially at least the individual champions did get into that event and did play for a national championship, as the case may be. I know as Division II has become more developed that's probably never going to be the case, and I know from the way that the calendar lined up this past year that just wouldn't have been possible, because we were competing in the national championship game on the same day that they were playing the quarterfinals of the tournament. So it would certainly be a great opportunity for us to further our program. Would be a lot of matches. There's no doubt about
it. Well,
that. It would be interesting. It would have been very interesting. I know with my team last year, which may be one of these teams that only comes along once in a career on the men's side, it would have been very interesting to see how we would have done. And I'm far from thinking that we could even get close to Southern Cal. But, I think definitely on an individual basis, when you match the players up man for man, it would have been very interesting. Put it that way. I don't really want to put any numbers out there, but I feel like we definitely... you know what's interesting is they still have the draws up on at the facility in Athens. And it's interesting when you look at the draw and trying to work out how you... or at least trying to hypothesize how you would have done. And I feel like we... like I said, we could have managed to move on in a couple of positions, at least a round or so. Question is, can you make the round of 16? And I think that's when it gets really interesting, and obviously gets extremely tough at that point. And again, with the process of the way they make the draw, because it's not really a true draw, is it? There's that regional component.
No.
I could imagine where we'll end up playing, which will certainly maybe marginalize our opportunity to move on. That being said, though, Augusta State did win two national titles in golf in Division I. They had one of these situations where one of their programs was Division I, and they were able to actually step up based on the match play format and win it a couple of years in a row. And so you never know, right? You never know.
Go ahead.
Potentially would be better for the opportunity and the experience.
Oh, I think the small colleges would be all for it. I think you're right. The NCAA Division I's would say, no way, we can't do that. That's just ridiculous. I mean, I think there's a little bit of fear driven in that, because you and I both know, coming from small colleges, that there are times where we get kind of the perfect storm. And we put together a team that we're just curious about. How would they do?
Yeah, no doubt. It would have been very interesting last year. I mean, we did play University of North Florida, which was, you know, Coach Shaktley honored that match, and we had a great match with them. We were able to beat them 7-0, but I mean, it was much closer than the score would say, and they were able a few days later to beat a team in the 30s in the Division I rankings. I don't really know what that says, but like you said, it would be interesting.
You bet. Simon, I got to take a quick commercial break here. When we come back, I've got a short little interview to give you, and then we'll get into the meat of this conversation, okay?
All right.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
All right, Simon, are you there?
Yep.
Okay, very good. I've got to let my live listeners know that we're going to run about 5 minutes over today. Simon and I are going to get into some of this, so I just want to let you know, Simon, I'll keep you on about 5 minutes after. We got to get through some of these other things that I like to let people know a little bit more about Simon Earnshaw and himself. So can you tell us what age were you introduced to tennis and who introduced you?
Yeah, I started playing tennis pretty late, actually. I was 11 or 12 years old. My mom used to play squash when she was younger. She used to play on the local team at a club in town, and I guess she kind of quit after we were born, and she sort of revisited it a little bit later in life, and the squash club also had tennis courts, and we were introduced into that with a lady called Tilly Pryor, and I took my first tennis lessons with a gentleman by the name of Colin Graham, who was it wasn't really the pro at the club. We didn't really have a pro at that point in time, but he was a gentleman that was, I don't think he was retired, but he was just trying to give something back to the game at that point in time. So it was pretty late, 11 or 12 years old. That didn't help.
And is there a phrase or concept that you heard at an early age as a tennis player that you kept through the years?
You know, I wouldn't say there was any one thing other than that I needed to put a lot of balls in the court. I don't know how well that I don't know how well that translates. The game's changed so much. There was a lot of things I wish I knew at that age, and I certainly wish I'd started a lot earlier, and I've kept those with me, but not that much from the beginning. I just didn't necessarily have a good grasp on what I was doing at that point, I would say.
Yeah. Now, do you have, personally, do you have what you would consider a great tennis player accomplishment?
You know, I don't think I ever did anything great. I mean, the college team that I played on was as high as top five in Division Two. We made the quarterfinals at best of the national tournament. Would have probably felt better if we'd made the Final Four, but no, I don't think I was ever anything special. I was just going out there and trying to work as hard as I could and trying to see if I could find a way to win a match or two in my life. I mean, I played probably in one of the strongest areas in the north of England. We certainly produced more than our number of high-level players. So I was just kind of happy to be able to participate at a certain level and to keep the ball in the court more than a shot or two here or there. So I don't think I was never anything special. I think I was always maybe a better player in my mind than I actually really was. So, no, I guess I could play. I could hold my own reasonably. But I don't think I ever really quite achieved what I think I was capable of when during my playing days. Probably why I'm a coach.
Well, what do you love about coaching college tennis?
You know, I didn't really get my head around it until my senior year in college, and I started to, first of all, realize that I had a lot more to give and to enjoy my work during the summer working for Boletaris, and that provided me with a lot of experience that I've been able to use moving forward. And it just seemed an opportunity to do something that I really enjoyed, to work with a certain, I guess, segment of the tennis-playing population that I found particularly enjoyable. And in some ways, maybe I'm kind of reliving that experience that I couldn't have as a player. And really, I don't really see it as a job. It's something that I can do every day, something that I love, and something that's also ever-changing because, as you well know, the players come and go. 4 years seems like a long time, but it just doesn't seem to last very long at all once you're in that position. And so it provides me with a challenge, and it's kind of that even though, let's say, this past year we supposedly found a way to do it better than before, doesn't mean we can necessarily replicate it the next year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, is there a phrase or concept that you yourself as a coach find yourself using over and over again?
I think I'm pretty sure my players would tell you otherwise, but I'm actually not a coach that really, how you get a lot of coaches, they have these phrases or quotes that they put out there, or they try to motivate their players or their students with. Maybe I'm the antithesis of that. It's more my example or what I'm trying to do on a daily basis, and the way, not necessarily the way that I live my life, but the way I go about being motivated to try and get a little better every day. I always remember this one thing that Nick Boletari said that struck me when I worked there, where he told me, or he said in this video that we played for all the students at the beginning, and I think I'm getting that right. I probably could be getting that wrong, and I may get killed on that one, right? But where essentially he stole the best bits of what everybody else was doing and then put them together, and that was his philosophy. So, I'm always out there, and certainly certainly willing to try and assimilate what everybody else is doing well, and hopefully I can sort of reproduce that with my own spin on it, and that can help us to improve. I mean, because certainly if you're staying the same, you may as well be going backwards.
Yes, definitely. Kyle, let me ask you this, and I think there's a biased answer here, but you know, in America, we have the Super Bowl. We've got a day where we get special food, we clear out the living room, and we watch American gridiron football. In the Earnshaw household, is there a particular tennis tournament that you might do some of the same things, or you just say, hey, leave me alone, I'm going to watch this event?
You know, I am not – well, I do watch a lot of tennis on TV. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But, you know, I'm every bit as much a fan of the NFL or other sports. You know, I can pretty much watch any sport. It's actually, you know, one of my favorite sporting events is the Tour de France. So this whole business with Lance Armstrong's really been a little bit of a downer, has to be said. I mean, in fact, I think one of the things that I would hopefully be able to do in my life is I'd love to follow the whole race for the 3 weeks in July. I think that would be, you know, whether or not they're doing what these guys are doing, to facilitate that, it's still just an amazing accomplishment in itself, and I really look at that as being just a fantastic sporting event. And I think that, you know, that in itself, never mind again these things that have been going on, is it's a free event. I mean, there's not too many things in the world that you can experience up close. And certainly not that close, because you can actually affect the race, as we've seen many times in the past, which you can get to do for free. So I'm pretty much a fan of all sports. And, I mean, if we're not playing the weekend of the Super Bowl, which unfortunately seems to be the case a lot of the time, I would certainly be doing the same thing that you may be doing or the rest of this country would be doing on that day.
Now, let's just say hypothetically here that there is a World Championships of Doubles. They've got an open spot in the draw, and they say, give this Simon Earnshaw a call and let him pick his partner. I'm curious, out of current former players out there on the planet, if Simon Earnshaw had his chance to pick a great doubles partner, who would it be?
Well, they used to say, didn't they, that John McEnroe and anybody would be the best doubles team in the world. The only problem that I have in that one is that I'm left-handed also. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know which side he would have me play on. So you've got to think that right now I probably want to play with either Bob or Mike Bryan.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, forget the current singles players. I would say that I would be being way too dismissive of what those two guys have accomplished in the doubles game. So, you know, rather than going with necessarily the obvious picks, which would be Roger Federer, I would say it made much more sense for me to play with Bob or Mike. Although I have to say, it would be nice to play with John Isner. I mean, to have that serve behind you.
No doubt.
Would make things awfully easy, at least when he's serving.
Yeah, definitely. Now, do you have an all-time favorite tennis player?
You know, when I was younger, I don't know necessarily why I got caught up on this, but I always liked Mats Wilander. I don't know particularly whether he just had that year when he won the three in 1 year. And he finally managed to overcome Lendl. Whether that, you know, struck something with me, but he was definitely a player I looked up to when I was young. And it may well just have been that I tried to sort of emulate his way of play. I know for me, it's from growing up in Great Britain, Tim Hemman was always somebody I followed. But I think there's been a lot of different players. I mean, certainly Roger Federer and everything that he stands for is something that you can admire. I thought Pat Rafter was a fantastic competitor. So you know, my wife will always tell you Goran Ivanisevic, and, you know, he's a character in himself, right? So certainly it would be very difficult for me to say one over another, except for when I was younger, Philander was a player that
I agree. I was glued to the TV that day. He and Lindell played that open, and to watch him overcome Lindell in that match was just pure excitement from where I was sitting. It was just a great, great day for tennis. To get three of the four at that time was extremely hard.
Yeah, and you hadn't, you know, in many ways, Lindell was the guy you love to hate, right?
Maybe the
press portrayed him in that way, and I'm actually sure he's probably a great guy and got an unreal sense of humor, and I think a lot of people have alluded to that. But you know, I was just a little bit young that unfortunately I missed the whole, really kind of missed the whole Connors, McEnroe, Borg situation in the early '80s, and you know, it would have been nice to experience that. Certainly, I kind of enjoy watching that rivalry when you see it rerun every time it rains. It's one of the Grand Slams. You know, they don't half get a lot of mileage out of Connors' run at the Open and that tiebreak at Wimbledon. But it's hard to actually say with the way McEnroe and Connors were portrayed in the press. Certainly, I mean, this is not the American press because I'm growing up in Great Britain, that it was actually seen as a good thing if you supported them. Even though obviously they were great for tennis.
Obviously, yeah. Now, let me ask you now: do you have an all-time favorite tennis racket?
Yeah, you know, I actually still use it. I have no clue why I still use it, but I have the Prince Graphite Oversize. I keep threatening to change. But I've still got a couple of them sitting right here next to me. And, you know, maybe that's just, I don't know why. You know, honestly, I don't know why I still use that racket. I mean, that certainly doesn't help.
You know, it's one of the craziest things on my show. I ask that weekly, and inevitably that is one of the most popular rackets to ever come about, and yet you cannot find, and Prince doesn't make them anymore, I don't understand why, that on the market.
You know, I didn't even know. I have one new one at home. I also have a brand new one of the Michael Chang version of that racket that hasn't ever been taken out of the wrapper at home as well. I actually did play with that briefly to try and get that. You know, we're all trying to copy Chang, and I'm not the tallest, so I thought I could get that extra bit of leverage. But again, just came back to the Prince Graphite pretty much every time.
Well, Simon, we don't have a lot of time left here. And let me ask you, and I'm curious about this because of your D2 status here. You know, in college tennis, we are up against the wall here on the American versus international perspective. So can you kind of give us an international viewpoint on this American agenda here? Do you think that there are too many international players in American tennis at the collegiate level?
You know, I think that, first of all, there are a lot of internationals in college tennis. I don't necessarily think there's as many as they think they are. You know, sometimes you can manipulate the statistics to represent something the way you want to represent it. Certainly, I know at my level, it would be great if I could attract more U.S. Student athletes. I know that certainly in the freshman or sophomore year that the process and the things that we're able to do with the players would be accelerated because it would be starting from at least from much more of a familiarity standpoint. But it's kind of a reflection on the game. I know why I came to the U.S. and I know a lot of the student athletes that we've had in the program do remain here, and they go on and they have families here, and they certainly contribute just as much as the next person to society. I think that the rap comes on the people that come and they don't invest anything. they don't really give anything back, and then they just get out of there and they somehow are jaded or biased about the whole experience. That doesn't help anybody. But I guess the question is if you removed all the internationals, would it hurt the overall level of college tennis? And particularly right now, college tennis seems to be at a high point, at least relatively in the last 10 to 20 years. So you've got to wonder, would we trade the position that we're in right now, which and again, could be a lot better as well, for less international players. And, you know, I'm a little on the fence about it. And even though clearly I benefited in that regard, I didn't necessarily benefit as much as people think I might have done. I mean, it wasn't exactly getting the largest scholarship under the sun. And personally, I think overall it's better for college tennis. I mean, you certainly have got schools doing well now that otherwise wouldn't have been in the past.
Yep.
I think that if you get a bit more parity, it can't be a bad thing. I mean, a monopoly is not always the greatest for anything. So, you know, bit of competition's got to help, as long as it's healthy.
You bring up a great point. I mean, and I'm curious, with your kids that you bring into this American university system, do you find that a majority of them are either staying or they're contributing to society?
You know, it's probably 50-50. It's strange, actually. Our women's program, a lot of them do stay, and it's not necessarily the stereotype that they get married and that they stay here. I mean, they go on to, let's say, a graduate program, and then, you know, they may even get a PhD, and then they enter the business world, or they get a great MBA, and somebody hires them or headhunts them. And I guess a high level student athlete has a lot to offer to a competitive company who's trying to expand their brand. And so a lot of our girls have ended up staying here. You know, other side, it's a little more hit and miss with the guys. I think guys, whether they have the aspirations to keep doing something in the game of tennis, which may well keep them here, or they end up going back home. I mean, I think part of it depends on their background or their family's situation. I think it's hard to generalize because it's different. Like it is different for every American kid that, in there, it's different for every kid based on their situation. And it's one of these things that they don't necessarily know when they come in where they're going to end up, just like it was with me. I mean, it's something I wanted to do, but that long, winding road to get you to that point doesn't necessarily go in the direction you think it will.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Simon, I hate to end this interview. I'm gonna try my hardest to get you back on in the spring. We've got a lot more to talk about, and you know, I want to give you a chance. If someone hears this podcast and they want to get in touch with you about a player or about Armstrong Atlantic, how do they go about doing that?
Well, definitely, you're either gonna email me, call me. Probably the easiest way is to call me. I don't know if you wanted me to give a number over the air, though.
That's up to you. You go ahead.
Yeah, well, the easiest way, you just call me at 912-344-3195. You can also find us at Armstrong Tennis on Facebook or Armstrong Tennis on Twitter. There's many different mediums that we're putting out there, and if you go to the university's website, armstrong.edu, follow it to athletics, and you'll pretty much see everything on there. And I think most people are fairly adept at using the internet these days, and certainly a lot easier than when I was trying to find a place over here, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Come a long way in that regard.
Simon, I want to thank you for coming on. I want to wish you and your kids the best of luck up there at that NCAA Intercollegiate Indoor Championships. You and I both know that it'll depend upon the draw, what happens there, and that can sometimes be tilted. But please represent the small college as well up there.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me on the show and giving me this outlet to hopefully provide some information and certainly information about our program here, and that's much appreciated. And yeah, even though it's indoors, hopefully we can do well, and you know, even one match is a good opportunity on that stage. So yeah, I appreciate your support in that regard. Cheers.
You bet. We look forward to talking to you again. Have a great day out there in Georgia.
All right. Thank you.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That is Coach Simon Earnshaw. Simon's out at Armstrong Atlantic State University and out there in Savannah, Georgia. He's one of the top coaches in the United States of America, and he does so, and he wins. He's one of those guys that gets it, being able to put that proverbial carrot in front of the horse, draws good players. It motivates these kids to want to succeed, and he takes those horses and drives them to national championships. Successful all the way through and through academically and athletically. And just glad that you stayed in tune today, and look forward to getting back on the air in the spring. Want to remind you that tomorrow is American Tennis with Chuck Creasy. That show comes on at 11 o'clock. And then after him is the Bruce Lipka show on Thursday at 11 o'clock, both those Central Standard Times. You can download us on iTunes under the podcast section, or you can go to Blog Talk Radio in their archive section to get more UR Tennis episodes. I want to thank you, and look forward to talking to you again next week. On next week's show, as we go through this, we have Mr. Lance Drake of Tarleton State University, another Division II coach, a little different perspective on things, and we look forward to having Lance on air with us. Please come back and listen to us more often. Thank you.
Opinions stated by various contributors to UR Tones Radio and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tones Network. Visitors are urged to use their own discernment to draw their own conclusions. All information, products, services, and use of this website is for personal use only. UR Tones Radio does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of the information contained within the website. Any services or products provided by UR Tones Radio and its hosts or contributors should be used solely for entertainment and enjoyment. We emphasize the importance of keeping an open mind and not construing the data, products, and/or services as factual.